Political Watch with Graham Richardson.
And Graham Richardson joins me this afternoon. Hello, Graham. Thank you for your time as always, mate.
That's all right. Always a pleasure.
I hope you're fit and well.
Well, I'm sitting at the Royal Motor Yacht Club overlooking the harbour, the beautiful boats. I've had a wonderful lunch. I'm in a very good mood.
Life is good, huh?
Yeah, not too bad.
Let's start. I've got so many sort of things, dot points to talk to you about, but you've always got your thoughts ready. Let's talk Donald Trump. He's been indicted by a Manhattan grand jury. They're going to arrest him on Tuesday, or he's going to hand himself in on Tuesday. I spoke this afternoon to a good colleague of yours that you talked to many times on your telly show, Dr. Keith Suter. We spoke about that this afternoon. Keith has said, obviously, they're not going to take pictures because this morning it was reported in the news that, you know, there may be signs, there may be pictures posted of Trump being, you know, handcuffed and fingerprinted and all that sort of thing. Apparently that is not going to happen. Your thoughts on the news this morning that broke, did you think it was going to happen after all?
Yeah, I think it was becoming inevitable, and Trump has almost been inviting it. I think he sees this as great publicity, and he'll use it to try and make sure that he never comes to court.
It's funny, you know. Already today, Trump's been on social media inviting his followers to basically donate money to his cause. And Keith was telling us the last time he did this, he raised more than $1 million.
Yeah, but it's a joke. The guy's a billionaire. What does he need your money or my money or the average punter's money when he's got all that money in the bank?
Keith feels, do you agree with him? Keith feels that he will probably end up with the Republican nomination. Are you thinking the same way?
I think so, yeah. He's still got a stranglehold on the party. Now, I think the Republican Party have got to try and find a way to get rid of him because he's a lead weight in their saddlebag.
And that Keith was saying, Graham, that if that is the case, and he is up against Joe Biden in 2024. I might add, I just cannot believe with some of the things that have happened, even this week. Did you see the reports of Joe Biden talking about, you know, when we wanted to hear serious things from Joe Biden there about what went on with the shooting, there was Joe Biden at the pulpit at the press conference talking about, you know, eating chocolate chip ice cream, for God's sake.
Yeah, well, I think he has lost it. He's been losing it for a while, quite publicly, but now I think he's just lost it. It's time for him to move over.
Richo, I've got this here. Have a listen to this.
My name is Joe Biden. I'm Dr. Joe Biden's husband. And I ate Jenny's ice cream, chocolate chip. I came down because I heard there was chocolate chip ice cream. By the way, I have a whole refrigerator full upstairs.
I mean, this is the stuff he was carrying on with when Fox News crossed to for a very somber report. He was supposed to be addressing the nation where the shooting happened and three children and three adults were killed. And this is what they saw. In the end, Fox News, it went on and on and on, and Fox News had to sort of basically say, well, I'm terribly sorry about that, but we thought that the mood would be more somber than what it is. It's just embarrassing, isn't it?
Well, I think he's embarrassing a lot. It's not just this time. But I wonder when it comes a point where the Democratic Party simply say to him, you must go.
I suppose that'll happen when they've got someone to replace him.
Well, they'll never have someone to replace him unless they move him.
Yeah, you know, true.
Someone will step up. Someone always steps up. But they're not going to step up while he's still there.
Richard, I've got a listener question that has just come through, and I might add, I neglected to say this. I was going to send you a text message and let you know this, but the feedback that I got after speaking to you last Friday, gee, you've got a lot of people out there that love listening to you, because you and I, obviously for obvious reasons in me not being here, haven't spoken in a while. And when we did last Friday, the reaction after our chat, there's so many people that love listening to you each and every week, Graham, so you've got a lot of lovers.
Good on, well, that's very nice of them, and I return all the good feelings.
Question here, could you please ask Richo, do you know if there's been a time where all states are under the one party?
Yeah, I've been asked that. I don't believe so. Certainly not in my lifetime. This is an unprecedented situation. You know, it's the Labor era.
You were a very happy person last Saturday night on the telecast.
Well, I was for a number of reasons. Obviously, I'm always happy when Labor wins. But Chris Minns is a friend of mine, and I was very happy for him in particular. He's a terrific guy, and I think he'll be a really good Premier. I think there'll be a Premier for those who voted for him and those who didn't.
Graham, we've spoken on this program this week quite often about how long it's taken the New South Wales Electoral Commission to count these votes. Even today, almost a week later, we still don't have final results, and I think it was when I came to air 3 seats. Are you surprised at how long it's taken for these votes to be counted or not?
I am surprised, and it shouldn't take this long, and there needs to be a big shake-up at the electoral office, a big shake-up. I'd say the boss has to go, and maybe a few others have to go as well. There's absolutely no reason to hold New South Wales waiting for this long. No reason whatsoever.
Graham, it beggars belief that in 2023, in a, well, state and a federal election, on Saturday night, in the midst of everything, at 10:30 they down tools and go home and don't work on a Sunday.
I know, it's absurd. It's just absurd. And it has to end. You know, the people in New South Wales are entitled to know what happened a lot earlier than what they're going to find out. And I think the idea that you have Sunday off, listen, you don't get to have an election more than once in every 3 years. So it's not as if they're overworked. They have to work on that Sunday.
We sent the electoral office some questions. They replied to a couple, but the one that we wanted the answer, they didn't reply. I asked the question as to why there was no counting on Sunday. They never gave me an answer. But what they did say was they blamed lack of staff. They said in their reply that they couldn't get staff. And I just couldn't believe that. I mean, it's not difficult. I don't believe it's difficult to find people that are going to earn good money for counting votes.
It's not. They just didn't start early enough. When you start late, you don't finish well. And that's been the problem they've got. They need as I said, a big shakeout has to occur at the electoral office because it's not good enough. This is a second-rate answer for the people of New South Wales, and I think they're entitled to a lot more than that.
You've been involved in a lot of federal and state elections in your term, in your time. Has there been a result moan as quickly as it was on Saturday night before, in your experience?
There have been a few landslides where you knew pretty early. Daniel Andrews has had a few where I think you knew very early. You get them occasionally. Not often, but they do bob up.
Are you surprised that, of course, on Saturday night, Labor was celebrating a majority government, but it seems at this stage, and we're still waiting, of course, on the New South Wales Electoral Commission to finalise counting, but it seems at this stage Chris Minns is only going to get his 46 seats. He won't get that majority government. Are you surprised by that result?
Well, no, not really. He's done pretty well to get where he is, it's pretty hard to get further. You know, we are in that era where the support for both parties isn't all that different. You've got One Nation preferences bolstering the Libs. You've got Greens bolstering us. So in the end, it works out to be pretty tight.
I heard a comment made this week from a commentator saying about how much Labor Liberal have changed in recent years, and that they can't see, now that there is a red blanket across Australia, they can't see the Liberal Party getting back into power federally and in the state of New South Wales for another 20 years, if ever.
No, that's over the top. No one can predict the future. You don't know what'll happen, what scandals might emerge. Who might have a heart attack at the wrong time. There are a whole lot of things that you don't know. So I'm not prepared to say that. It is a Labor era, Labor is outpolling the Liberals in almost every state. So you've got to say we're going to do well, but nothing lasts forever.
Richo, the Liberal Senate leader was questioned on radio this morning, and he was questioned whether the opposition leader Peter Dutton's leadership is going to be determined on the outcome of this Aston by-election tomorrow being held in Melbourne's east. Your thoughts on if it's very close. The Liberal Party clung on to Aston at the 2022 election, but the margin was slashed 10.1% to 2.8%, and Labor are doing a good job in the lead-up to this by-election down there. What's your thoughts on the question that was asked this morning?
As far as I'm concerned, the Liberals have to win Aston to have any credibility at all. And so, yes, Peter Dutton will be in all sorts of strife if they lose it.
Trouble is, there's not that many people in the federal Liberal Party that are able to take over the role at the moment, is there?
No, it'll probably go to Angus Taylor, who's hardly going to frighten the horses. But that's about it. They don't have too many who could step up, I don't think.
Back to the New South Wales election quickly. I forgot to ask you this. Are you surprised that Matt Keane didn't put his hand forward for the leadership of the party?
No. Matt Keane knows how controversial he is. He knows that if he was the leader, the party, there'd be a real chance of a split. So he's done the right thing by his party and not seized the personal opportunity.
Can I ask you, why do politicians leading up to elections always say that they'll never do deals with other parties when we know that they'll have to? And of course, I'm talking about Anthony Albanese. He said it several times in the lead up to the election that he wouldn't do deals with the Greens. And of course, we've seen only this week that they've had to get it over the line, the legislation over the line. They have done deals with the Greens. I read one article this week where it said that one of the most powerful politicians in Canberra at the moment is Adam Bandt.
Yeah, sadly, that's true, because he has neither the intellect nor the character to be in that position. And it's a bit sad, as far as I'm concerned, for the country.
Why do politicians say they won't do deals when we, as voters, know that they're going to have to do deals? Does that make them lose a little bit of credibility?
I would admit the fact that you've got to do it. How else is Labor going to govern without the support of the Greens? The answer is it can't. So therefore, the deal has to be done. It doesn't matter whether you want to do it or not. It has to be done.
The Treasurer, Jim Chalmers, is seeking to reach a common ground with the Coalition for an overhaul of the Reserve Bank. Jim Chalmers said, I think it was this morning, that he was encouraged by his coalition counterpart Angus Taylor's attitude towards the efforts to engage with this independent panel that will deliver its review to the RBA. I couldn't believe it, but apparently it's the first review of the bank since 1981, Graham.
Yeah, well, they're untouchable, the RBA. If you're independent, you don't get examined. And they've been free of examination for a long time. Too long, probably. I'm glad there's been someone taking a look at them. That's, I think, a good thing for all of us. And that's by no means to criticise the RBA, but everybody has to be accountable, including them.
This week we read that we're set to see the biggest ever immigration surge, with government figures revealing 650,000 migrants are predicted to arrive this financial year and next. The next day on Breakfast Television, we saw the mayor out in Parramatta saying that, I'm sorry, we're not going to take any people here in the western suburbs because we are full. The no vacancy sign is going out. 650,000. That's a lot, Graham.
It is. If it's going to happen, Western Sydney will take more, whether they like it or not. If you can't go out, you go up, but you go somewhere.
Do governments make money by increasing the number of immigrants?
Federal governments certainly do. State, to a lesser extent, but they still make something out of it.
And
so, yes, it's profitable for governments in the short term.
in the short term. So having said that, how much of that is based on the decision to increase immigrant numbers?
Well, the decision to increase immigrant numbers is something you've got to make every year anyway, right? You are forced to make that because you've got so many people wanting to come, and we've got so many people here wanting to bring in their relatives, whether it be mum, dad, sister, brother, whatever. They want to bring them in. So you are forced to make that decision, and you're forced to make it every year.
Do you think 650,000 immigrants in this period of time between now and the end of the financial year in 2024 is too many?
Sounds a lot, doesn't it?
It does. It does.
It sounds an awful lot. I'm not sure we need 650,000. I mean, I know, you know, some people argue that we ought to be populating much, much more. I'm not one of them. I think a gradual and steady increase is fine.
On that note, I will thank you for your time and let you get back to your lovely location to conclude your lunch.
Good on you, Brent. You're a great human being.
Thank you, mate. We'll talk to you next week.
See you later, mate.
See you, mate. Bye-bye. That is Graeme Richardson.